Chapter 5, Dragon Lair. December 23rd, Mirth. The seven travelers arrived back at the cave well before dawn, planning on an early departure. But the sky had brightened to a dullish gray by the time they left. That was as bright as midwinter skies get in this region of Mirth. Ertish was incessantly grumbling about punctuality and how Terra had not told him they were married on Earth. Terra countered that he wouldn't be worrying if he hadn't insisted on joining them and that she regretted ever telling him the truth. All of this bored the girls, so they coaxed their dragon partners out of their nests and headed out to play. Safe insisted that everyone have a healthy breakfast before leaving, which meant rousting Juice out of his warm nest to go hunting. He, of course, brought back inappropriate breakfast food and had to try again with more explicit instructions. Safe puttered around straightening the cave until he returned. Then they spent over an hour trying to find the girls once breakfast was ready. Afterward, Safe realized she hadn't packed any snacks for the trip and sent Juice on another hunt with different instructions. The young dragons had finished breakfast and made a mess of the cave by the time he returned, which meant both parents had to straighten it again. Despite strict parental instructions, the girls did not remain close and were nowhere to be seen by the time the adults were ready to leave. The two adult dragons flew off to spend another hour searching for their offspring, followed by a good 20 minutes of scolding, sulking, and general disobedience. Stavius wasn't surprised. He had expected this to happen when they arrived and explained to Janice how his family's departures always required at least 3 hours. Janice, who was an only child, found this hard to accept and pointed out that dragons didn't even need to pack. He begrudgingly agreed that Stavius's prediction was correct when Safe sent Juice out to forage for breakfast the second time. Janice was now also bored and suggested, "Hey, as long as we're waiting, perhaps you can help me with something." Janice led Stavius to the Soul Reaper's room and explained about the order of the key. Stavius was understandably nervous about approaching the four Soul Reapers standing motionless in the room. Janice, however, casually walked past them and slid his arm into the solid rock wall. He pulled the stone back like a curtain and waved to invite Stavius to enter. Stavius quickly slipped past the Soul Reapers and into the room where Janice showed him L. Janice's note. Janice said, "This is everything I know, other than that those books all appear to be handwritten in Latin." "Ugh, I hate Latin," groaned Stavius. "It's like a combination of the worst aspects of my least favorite subjects, writing and history." "Yeah, it's my worst subject as well," agreed Janice. "But L. Janice claims to have deciphered some of it and left his findings on a workbench. I'm guessing that it's in a room behind that door." "Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go into the workshop," Stavius cheerfully replied as he pushed on the door. "Hey, it's locked." "No kidding, genius. And it doesn't appear to have a doorknob," grunted Janice with a shake of his head. Some of the dragon's grumpiness had rubbed off on the boys. "Who locks a door in a secret room which is only accessible by invited people?" complained Stavius. "Beats me. Perhaps you can search for a key in those drawers while I see if I can use some sort of magic to open it," answered Janice. Janice tried every magical spell he knew to open the door, while Stavius carefully searched through every cabinet and drawer. The two sat down in failure to consider their options 10 minutes later. "Any luck with the magic?" asked Stavius. "Nothing that even works a little," sighed Janice. "I'm guessing you didn't find a key, eh?" "No such luck," answered Stavius. "L. Janice was right. The books all seem to be written in Latin, although there are some ancient scrolls written in a language I don't even recognize. And you do not want to know what is in those drawers. I'm not really sure what most of those objects are, but I sure hope they were carved and not mummified. Either way, I wouldn't want to touch them." The boys stared at the door for a while longer, and Stavius pointed at the silver stars and dragons randomly scattered over the door face. He said, "I wonder what those decorations mean." "I don't know what they're supposed to represent, but it has seen better days. There are scratches all over the door, and one of the panels is missing," answered Janice. He was right. The door was solid wood and was designed to be faced with three rows, each with three wooden panels. The top right panel was missing, and the rest had little silver stars and dragons embedded in them. Every panel had deep, straight scratches extending from the silver elements to the panel edges. "I wonder what happened to the missing panel," asked Stavius as he stood up and touched the top center panel. It was loose and shifted slightly to the right at his touch. "Well, I guess that answers that question," he muttered as he started to sit down. Janice, however, jumped up and exclaimed, "Stavius, you're a genius! The door's not broken. It's a puzzle!" Stavius tried to stop himself from sitting down at the last moment, but his efforts only caused him to fall over and crack his elbow on the hard rock floor. Janice was desperately jumping to reach the top panel, but failing because he was too short. "We need to rearrange these panels. It's like those cheap little plastic puzzles where you slide the squares around until you get a picture of a frog or a kitty cat or a series of numbers arranged in order. I bet rearranging the panels into the right pattern unlocks the door," squealed Janice. Stavius was not feeling like a genius as he stood up to stare at the door and rub his sore elbow. He grumbled, "I always hated those birthday party favors. They were like the precursors to Rubik's Cubes. I never could solve either one." Janice beamed. "Well, we're lucky that I am great at puzzles like this. I could solve a 3x3 slider in a couple of minutes if I knew the picture. However, this doesn't look like a cat or a frog." Stavius suddenly felt much more valuable as he stated, "That's because it isn't a picture of an animal, and those cracks and scratches aren't accidental. This is a picture of a mighty hunter. See those three silver dragons in a row? The puzzle is a constellation map of Orion." Less than 5 minutes later, the boys heard a satisfying click as the image of Orion firing his bow and arrow appeared on the door. The space for the missing panel was now in the bottom right, exposing a deeply carved grip on the heavy wooden door backing the movable panels. Stavius drew a deep breath as he grasped the handle and pulled the door open. The room looked and smelled like Janice's grandfather's workshop. There were various woodworking tools neatly arranged on the wall and something which looked like a lathe in the back. The most significant objects, however, were resting on a workbench along the right-hand wall. There was a sheaf of papers anchored to the bench by a polished stone cube. Cubes like these were popular on Mirth as religious symbols or decorations. Most had the sun, the moon, and the gods' names carved on their six sides. This one had a W on top, an N on the bottom, and the letters L, I, E, and R carved on the sides. It must be the artifact L. Janice had mentioned. But the object which caught the boy's attention was the highly polished wooden container resting on the center of the bench. It was a scale model of the Cradle of Terra, devoid of any ornamentation, but with a shaft running through it and thin ropes extending from the bottom. Stavius extracted the wooden pins holding the two halves of the cradle together and removed the top to expose the interior of the container. Janice gasped, "Do you know what this is, Stavius?" Stavius answered, "Sure. It looks like a small model of all seven talismans fitted together. The shaft is the Spear of Mars, these pieces look like parts of the Crown of Helios, and those parts look like the Jewels of Luna. They are all stylized with no ornamentation, but I recognize them anyway."
"Yes, but I mean, do you know what this is?" repeated Janice.
Stavius fought back his desire to yell at Janice for not listening. He had, after all, just explained what was sitting on the workbench. Instead, he carefully counted to 10, gritted his teeth, and said, "Why don't you tell me what you think it is, Janice?"
"It's a DC motor."
Stavius realized Janice was right. He recognized it as being similar to the motor from the slot car he had disassembled once. It was one of the few times his dad had lost his temper. Mark had received the slot car set as a birthday present and had disassembled the car before they had even set up the track to play. Dad had yelled at him and stormed off furious that Mark had broken his new toy so quickly. He returned 15 minutes later to find that his son had rebuilt the car and was happily racing it around the track. They were definitely looking at a DC motor, although this scale model was much larger than Mark's slot car motor. The full-size version must be incredibly powerful. The boys now knew why they needed all seven talismans, but they still didn't know what would happen when they turned it on. Nor did they know where they would get the power to operate it. There was no electricity on Mirth.
Stavia said, Janice, we'd better go. We'll come back once we have all 7 talismans and assemble them here, as L. Janice suggested. Now, however, we'd better follow the instructions in his note and leave. I agree, said Janice. This explains so much, but now I have even more questions than before. Let's take L. Janice's notes and this paperweight with us, though. Perhaps they'll explain what we're supposed to do with a DC motor made out of dragonstones and how to power it. They slipped the sheaf of papers and stone cube into a small leather satchel they found in the corner of the room without studying them further. The two boys returned to the main cavern room during the group's final argument. No one seemed to have even noticed they had slipped out for the past few hours. Stavia shouted, Hey guys, can we continue this fight in the air? I'd rather not be here when that Septumkalan army arrives. Fine, but you three stay close together and behind your father and me, Safe growled at her children. We'll stay nearby, but I'm not flying next to Nari, said Sarah. I know you're not because I'm flying in front of you, countered Sarah. You are both wrong. We should fly in a V behind Mom and Dad. It's a more efficient way to travel, stated Mintaka. Shut up, Mintaka, screamed both her sisters at the same time. Stavius chuckled, Yep, just like home. When they finally left, the girls rode their bonded dragons while Safe and Juice each carried 2 riders. Janice and Tara rode Safe while Stavius and Ertish rode Juice. Stavius desperately attempted to convince Janice that he should ride with his aunt, but Ertish was too heavy for Safe to carry, and Juice insisted on taking Stavius. Juice flew in the lead with Safe just to his right and slightly behind. Mintaka flew in a similar position behind her mother to complete the right leg of the flying V pattern. Sarah and Nari refused to fly in such a ridiculous manner and spent the first hour of the journey racing back and forth and arguing about who should fly in front. Sarah and Nari eventually became tired and began to whine. Safe yelled at them to stop complaining and to fly like their sister to form the left leg of the V. They soon gave in, and Mintaka stuck out her long tongue at them when they did. Nari quickly blasted Mintaka with a fireball. Mintaka laughed and said in the most sickeningly sweet voice imaginable, Ooh, that was so nice and warm. Would you please do it again? Sarah chuckled, and Nari angrily told her to shut up. She was tired and embarrassed, but her sister's jab reminded her of her biggest complaint. She was cold. Late December is the beginning of the coldest part of the year in this region. Also, they were flying high in the sky where it was much colder than on the ground, and they were flying at a rapid pace with frigid wind and snow blowing in their faces. These are all reasons why few dragons choose to travel at this time of the year. The group fell into a rhythm after the girls flew into position and traveled in silence for about 15 minutes before Nari asked, How much farther is Grandma's place? That began a steady refrain of remarks like, Are we there yet? How much farther? How long is this going to take? I want to go home. Safe finally asked Juice to stop for a snack after the 14th complaint of being hungry. He wanted to push through, but Safe insisted in no uncertain terms that it was time for a break. She added that a snack break meant he wouldn't have to continue carrying the 6 giant beavers clutched in his claws. They stopped in a clearing, and Juice tossed the now frozen beavers to the girls. Hey, I can't eat this. It's frozen, whined Nari. Sarah and Mintaka poked at the stiff mammals and seemed to agree. They all wanted something warm. Juice angrily spun around and blasted the beavers with a small puff of flame. They were thawed within seconds, and steam was rising off their wet fur. Mom! Dad just spit on our food! Shrieked Sarah. What? I was just warming it up, complained Juice. Ew, I'm not eating that. That's gross, said Nari. Then you can just go hungry, growled Juice. We're leaving in 10 minutes whether you eat it or not. The girls poked at their food and did manage to eat a bit while Safe chastised her husband for spitting on the kids' snacks. He tried to explain, but gave up. 5 minutes after forming their flying V, Mintaka had to pee. And Sarah claimed Dad's spit gave her diarrhea. Juice pointed out that they were dragons and didn't really need to stop. They could just let loose while flying. Soon they were resting at the edge of a clearing, waiting for the girls to finish their business. Juice sat with his head bowed at the far side of the meadow, submissively listening to Safe explain proper etiquette. Stavius joked about the similarities between dragon and human families to Janus, and Terra and Nirtish huddled together, agreeing that this was why their Earth counterparts never desired to have children of their own.
Stavius made one more attempt to convince Janus to switch partners with him, complaining that he just couldn't bear being pressed up against Urtish any longer. He swore the fat man's sweat smelled like day-old boiled cabbage and onions. Janus declined, positing that altering the seating arrangement mid-journey would be disruptive. The skies were darkening by the time the travelers landed on a hilltop near their destination. Everyone was miserable from their long, painful journey, but Juice insisted on going in alone first. He said it was unwise for unknown visitors to barge in on 100 dragons unannounced. The group accepted his warning, even though everyone was desperate to get out of the cold. They were all tired, grumpy, and sick of each other's company. A half hour later, the group was still stuck on a mountaintop, waiting for Juice to return from the cave. The three dragon children were having fun sliding down a nearby slope. They were in a region with much higher mountains than around the cave valley, and this was the first time the young dragons had experienced a significant snowfall. The snow was 6 to 8 inches deep, and the dragon kids were taking turns diving and sliding down the hill on their bellies. The humans had built a small shelter and were huddling inside with some heating stones. They had flown over a magical wasteland for most of the day, but this area was rich with magical energy. The shelter and the magical heaters made the temperature bearable. However, Janus caught a strong aroma of day-old boiled cabbage and onions as they huddled together. He felt mildly guilty for not trading riding partners with Stavius. He was, nonetheless, pleased with his decision. Safe was alone outside when the dragons erupted out of the cave, but everyone was able to see the spectacle.
Juice raced out of the cave at breakneck speed, followed by two smaller dragons. Juice suddenly stopped a few hundred yards outside the cave entrance, and the dragon behind him crashed into his butt. Juice kicked him hard, launching himself upward while his attacker crashed to the forest floor.
The second dragon was also caught off guard but managed to veer out of the way. Juice, however, performed a spectacular backward loop and landed on his attacker's back with his talons extended. The smaller dragon shrieked in pain as Juice drove him to the ground. The ground shook, and terrible sounds echoed off the hills for several minutes. Occasionally, a dragon would attempt to escape only to be dragged back to the field as Juice's mouth clamped onto a leg or a wing and pulled him down. Neither the humans nor Juice's children had ever seen this sort of violence. The humans could feel the young dragon's shock and fear as they saw the murderous bloodlust in their father for the first time. They were all captivated by this horrific scene. Thus, no one heard the unknown, giant old dragon approach. Before any of them knew she was there, the newcomer pinned Safe to the ground with one of her massive talons clasped around her neck. Stavius, Narayana, Versera, and Elisa jumped out of their shelter without hesitation to save their friend. The older dragon noticed them for the first time and coughed a fireball in their direction. Stavius easily deflected the dragon fire and returned a powerful blast of his own. The blast hit the startled dragon squarely on her face and knocked her onto her back. Within seconds, Nari and Sarah were pinning the dragon's wings to the ground while Mintaka was tearing at her throat. "Stop!" screamed Safe. "Let her up immediately!" The confused dragons paused to stare at their mother. Mintaka stepped away from the dragon's neck but was ready to attack again if needed. Nari and Sarah, however, made no move to release the squirming dragon's wings.
"I said let her up!" commanded Safe.
"I deeply apologize for my children's behavior, Matriarch. They don't know any better and were simply trying to protect me." The older dragon stood up with disdain after Sarah and Nari released her wings.
"How can any dragon not recognize the standard greeting for an uninvited guest?"
asked the older dragon.
"Even newborns possess the memories of their ancestors."
"Well, my children don't have those memories. They bonded with humans," explained Safe, before quickly adding, "It's a long story." Matriarch turned to stare at the seven humans and studied them with disgust for a few moments before asking Safe,
"Who are these creatures? How did that human stop my fire and strike me with lightning? And how could a dragon bond with things like these?"
Narayana stepped forward and put her hand on Stavius's shoulder. She announced, This is the great dragon hunter Stavius. We are the prophecy heroes. Stavius added, We are friends of Juice and have come seeking aid and shelter. The travelers swore that Matriarch rolled her eyes in agony before groaning,
I should have expected as much. Battle always did bring home strays. We used to yell at him for playing with his food, but he would insist that they were his pets.
Matriarch rose up and roared,
Beetlejuice, get over here!
Stavius looked at Janice and whispered,
Beetlejuice?
Janice was still shrugging his shoulders when Matriarch roared, Beetlejuice, get over here this minute. I'm starting to count.
One.
The ruckus in the valley below stopped.
Two.
A blurry shape leaped out of the forest and sped toward them.
I'm coming, Mother. Please don't say three. I'm on my way.
Juice skidded to a stop in a cloud of snow and tried to act nonchalant. He panted,
Oh, I see. You've met everyone, Mom.
Wait, this is your mother? Asked Narayana.
Oh, so the formal introductions haven't been made yet. Good, began Juice.
Matriarch interrupted him to say,
You disappear for decades. You don't visit. You don't talk to anyone. You leave your mother here worrying about you. For all I know, you could have been laying dead in a field. And now you show up for the holidays, bringing a group of strays into my home. I don't know. I just don't know. Are you really my son?
Mom, it's not like that. These are my friends, and this dragon and her kids are...
They're a disgrace, is what they are,
interrupted Matriarch.
Okay, so I understand these kids are bonded with humans for some reason, although I can't imagine why. Their mother must be a real piece of work. Does she do drugs? Was she in prison? Is that what's going on here?
No, she doesn't do drugs, but she was sort of in prison, began Juice before he was interrupted again.
Matriarch continued,
I thought so, but I'm not one to judge. Still, these kids have to be at least 75 years old. That's plenty of time to learn some sort of appropriate behavior, even if they are bonded to humans. I'm sorry, that just sounds disgusting to me. I can't imagine the kind of home in which they were raised. You're so sweet to rescue them, but it's too much, Petal. It's too much.
Safe had heard enough. Matriarch, with all due respect, my children are only a few months old, and they...
A few months old! Shrieked Matriarch. Great gods, they are going to be huge! What are you feeding them?
Juice shouted, Mom! Stop! These aren't just any kids. These are my children, and Safe is my wife.
Matriarch promptly collapsed on the ground with her mouth silently opening and closing, while Safe grimaced. Safe's face always appeared in pain whenever Juice called her his spouse, mate, or wife. Matriarch stared at Juice, then at Safe, and finally at the young, frightened, and confused baby dragons. She finally uttered in the softest voice imaginable,
These are my granddaughters?
Yeah, Mom, meet Sarah, Nari, and Mintaka, said Juice with a proud grin.
Matriarch squealed,
They are so adorable! Come over here and give your bubby a hug!
Nari, Sara, and Mintaka gave their mother a questioning look and took a tentative step toward Matriarch when Safe gave a gentle nod.
We're sorry we attacked you, Matriarch, whimpered Sara.
All three were shaking in fear when Matriarch leaped forward and swept them into her wings. She squeezed them tightly and cried,
You didn't know our customs and were just trying to protect your mother. That is what any grateful child would do.
Matriarch gave a quick glare at Juice before continuing,
And don't you dare call me Matriarch. I'm Bubby Uriel to you. Come on, let's get you inside. You're freezing and you must be starving. When was the last time you ate?
Sarah sniffled that they hadn't eaten anything since breakfast except for some frozen beaver that Dad had spit on. Uriel glared at Juice again and whisked her grandchildren toward the cave. Juice tried to say,
Mom, it wasn't like that. I can explain. But she didn't seem to hear.
So can we go into the cave too? Asked Elisa. It is freezing out here.
Yeah, sure. Everything's cool, shrugged Juice.
Wait, but what about the dragons who attacked you? Asked Narayana.
What do you mean? Asked Juice in surprise.
All seven people pointed at the large, smoldering area of broken trees in the distance.
Oh, that? Those are my cousins. They were so happy to see me that we began wrestling until Mom yelled at us to go outside to play, laughed Juice.
Wait, that was playing? Asked Janice in disbelief.
More importantly, why were you playing while we were out here freezing? Screamed Narayana.
Hey, it's all part of the dragon greeting ritual, Juice hastily replied.
Safe snorted and said, Let's continue this in the cave where it's warm.
Just one more thing, insisted Janice.
Beetlejuice?
Juice looked uncomfortable and admitted, Yeah, that's my full name, but the only person who uses it is Mom, and only when she's mad.